Bird's Eye View is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com. BaltimoreSportsReport.com.
And welcome back to Bird's Eye View. This is your official source for a lack of insight and baseless opinion. Today is November 25th, 2013. This is episode 59. I'm Scott Magnus, and I'm here with my big boy, color commentator, sex dungeon operator. Too far?
A little bit.
Okay, Jake English. You can find us at birdseyeviewbaltimore.com. You can also find us at the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Go to baltimoresportsreport.com/network to find us. Also, you can find us on iTunes at birdseyeviewbaltimore.com/iTunes. If you just search for Orioles podcast, well, come right up. You can also find us at facebook.com/BEVcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at birdseyeviewBAL. Yes, that's at birdseyeviewBAL. And you should be following us on all kinds of other social forums and media, such as Miro, Stitcher, Double Twist, Creamsicle, Ice Cream Sandwich, Kit Kat, Nutter Butter, and Three Musketeers. So with that, you're giving me a strange look.
That's my usual look. That's the only look I've got.
So with that, Jake, what's your drink of the week?
My drink of the week is a little late, but it's an Oktoberfest by Shiner.
Okay. I was really hoping for an Oktoberfest as opposed to an Oktoberfest.
It's a little different. Podcast, slightly different.
I'm going with a Flying Dog Natural Selection Ale. It's a combination brew between Flying Dog and Evolution Brewery, which is based out of Salisbury now, as opposed to the coastal state of Delaware.
All right. Speaking of drinks, we should talk about what we did this Saturday. As you may or may not remember, we were part of the Gobble Wobble, which was a portion of the Guzzle and Gobble event, which Carne Carbeza threw together to raise money for Movember. And well, it was a great time, Scott. It was a lot of fun. I think that it was a... You know, they raised a ton of money. It's an excellent cause, and I can't wait to be part of it again next year.
Yeah, they raised almost $1,000 for prostate cancer awareness. So congratulations to Carne Cabeza to go out there and rally the bars of Federal Hill to hold that event. Kudos to him. I can't wait to come back next year and do it. We had our own personal memory. It ended, let me just say this. It ended with us going into a bar. We had lots of drinks. You weren't prepared to have this many drinks. We went into a Mexican restaurant, which was No Way Jose's. You questioned the Mexicans that were in the back of the kitchen because their wings weren't hot enough, so they made them super hot. And you proceeded to drink even more beer and liquor, including a margarita, in order to drown out that taste. You don't remember the margarita?
I'm going to say that one of us may have a firm memory of this event.
What do you mean? You don't remember drinking the margarita?
No.
Okay. But you definitely had a margarita. It was a really good margarita, too. But anyway, you had... Let me count my hand. Dun, 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 dun. You had 9 beverages. Do you know how many beverages I had?
No.
I had 3.
Well, I mean, you were driving.
Thank you. That's exactly right. So I was able to sober up and eat my dinner and not have a drink while you kept pounding down drinks as you ate these hot, hot, hot wings.
Okay, here's the problem. The deal was $2 Bud Lights. Okay, that was the deal. That's what I was prepared for. That's what I was mentally... That's where I was when I walked
in. That's how you were training for this.
Right, right. The problem is, amongst others, that in addition to having $2 Bud Lights, the drafts were also half price. And there are a lot of draft beers that maybe surpass the alcohol content of a Bud Light. So I was, you know, I was not prepared to count by twos, if you will. I was caught by surprise.
Well, you know, I'm sorry that you were caught by surprise. My car was especially upset that you were caught by surprise. But we managed to get you home, back safely, much to the scorn of your wife. But we got everyone home safely and sound. So, again, thank you, Carney, for throwing a great event. Great cause. You should still go and support Carney. He's still taking donations to this point for November. November's not quite over yet, so go and support it. And with that, we're looking forward to future events.
Yeah, absolutely. In all seriousness, it was a good time. The mustaches were creepy, and you know, hey, it's a good cause, and it was a lot of fun. Something I wanted to go back for, you know, it's been 2 weeks since we recorded. We got an extremely nice email, and that doesn't happen very often. You know, we get a lot of hate mail. We just put it in the file. It's fine.
It's a big file.
It's a big file. It's heavy. It's getting tough to move. But we got a really nice email this week, and, you know, I don't want to break my arm, pat myself on the back type of thing, but I did want to bring it up. We got an email from a guy named John, and John is from Norway.
What?
Yeah, Norway, it's a Scandinavian country.
Oh, I'm quite aware. Well, yeah.
Okay. So John from Norway said that he listens to the program and that it really helps to listen to the podcast because he says, "It should come to you as no surprise that being a baseball fan in Europe can be quite lonely, and learning the intricacies of the sport on my own can be a daunting at best." But it turns out that listening to the podcast is a way that he connects with baseball. And, you know, he goes on to write a couple of different things. One of the things he said is that, you know, he got a little bit into baseball. And as a kid, he was in Baltimore for like 2 days. And so that's why he decided to root for the Orioles. And I just thought that was so cool. Like, I am beyond flattered and honored that somebody would bother to spend their time with us every week. But beyond that, how cool is it that, you know, somebody from Europe has their, you know, baseball experience shaped around you and me? That's a shame for him. John,
that's a bad mistake right there.
We're going to need you to fix this, all right? Yeah. Need you to write back and tell us how you're fixing this and what you're listening to now. But I did want to get in touch with John, let him know that there are lots of great resources out there, including, of course, the Baltimore Sports Report Network. But I'm very interested to hear some of his experiences being that, you know, fan out in the wilderness in Europe and how the game of baseball is growing in Europe. So, you know, if you've got a story like this, go ahead and let us know. Looking at you know, some of the traffic, there's a lot of Scandinavian activity. France is another big source, and Romania. So I'm calling out all the listeners from Europe. I'm really interested to see what following the Orioles is like in Europe.
There's one group that I was really hoping that we would hear from by this point.
All right.
From our Europe colleagues. Kingdom of the Netherlands.
Yeah, it's true. We plug Kingdom of the Netherlands hard during the World Baseball Classic.
So Kingdom of the Netherlands, you're on notice.
Hey, I want my passport, Kingdom of the Netherlands. I plugged you as hard as I could.
Yeah. And John, get it together. Go find a better source.
Seriously. John, you're embarrassing us all.
Yeah.
It's no good.
We love you, though.
All right. So with that, I think we should move on to the real business of the show, if you can call it that. I'm in the mood for a little twat.
All right. So let's talk about what's going on in Twitter this week.
This week on the Twitter, if you will. You know, I know this is not your favorite, but there were a few Ravens tweets this week.
You remember, I turned my tune around on the last episode. I was ready for Ravens season, and look what happened. We get to sit through a five-hour game waiting for an eventual overtime loss.
Yeah, it's true. Since we haven't recorded in 2 weeks, we had a terrible loss at the hands of the Bears, and then we actually managed to win against the Jets. Since we've been together last, a lot of Twitter attention on Ed Reed, good, bad, ugly. Our friend...
No, that's for later.
Nah, our friend Zach Wilt over at the Baltimore Sports Report can't stand Ed Reed, thinks he's a bad guy.
Here's my question for Zach. What do you have against the homeless? Really?
He does have a fine hobo beard, doesn't he?
Yeah, what do you have against the homeless, Zach?
Here's a great thing about Ed Reed. You know, Ed Reed has not won a game since the Super Bowl.
I do know that, but, you know, let's just try to keep it that way.
All right, so he's been on the Texans. He's now in the Jets. The question for you, Scott, where is he going to go next?
The unemployment line?
I am seeing a great sequel to Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, starring Where in the World is Ed Reed. I think we could make this work. Where in the NFL is Ed Reed this week?
On the bench.
All right, so we got lots of Ed Reed tweets. The other great set of tweets regarding the Ravens that we were treated to this last week was Tyrod Taylor.
T-squared.
Everybody's favorite player is the backup quarterback. Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Why are people still obsessed with this guy?
My theory is we have a large contingent of Virginia Tech fans in the Baltimore metropolitan area. And since Tyrod Taylor actually went to Virginia Tech and was a Hokie, I think that there's a lot of sentiment for Tyrod Taylor because, frankly, who went to Delaware? Do you know anybody that's went to Delaware and it's successful? I don't.
All right. Can I get your thoughts real quick on the Wildcat?
Sure.
I think it was like 5 or 6 snaps in this last game that we saw.
5 or 6?
Was it more?
Oh, it was a lot more.
All right. So we saw way too much Tyrod Taylor.
Were you still wasted?
No. What did you think of the Wildcat?
I thought like the first 2 times it was kind of clever when they were mixing it in, but by the time they basically started taking Flacco out, especially in the red zone, I thought it was ridiculous. So, John Harbaugh, you're on notice. Don't do that again. In fact, there was even that situation where they were in the red zone, and I think it was 3rd down, they were in the red zone, and they put Flacco out to wide receiver, and they've got Tyrod, and Harbaugh has to run down the field and call the timeout. He's like, what the hell are we doing? Why are we doing this right now? Get Caldwell on the phone. This isn't happening any further.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of leaving your quarterback as a wideout with his hands in his pockets, literally.
Yeah.
Was not a big fan.
Well, to be fair, did he let Flacco go to the sidelines to try to find his mighty wings?
That's true. Yeah. Before the lights went out.
Yeah. I'm looking at you, Larry Bird.
All right, so there you have it. There's a little football talk. Let's go back to the diamond. Since we've been together, wow, that sounded awkward. Since you last left your heroes, we had the MVP announced, and I love how everyone in the media made it sound like the AL MVP race was actually an open question. I mean, could it have been anyone else besides Miguel Cabrera?
No.
As much as I hate to say it, the dude's a beast.
Yeah, well, he's pretty darn good. That's what happens when you've got Prince Fielder in that lineup.
Yeah, and the thing is that in this day and age, everybody is suspicious, but he appears to be doing it cleanly. He appears to be doing it on talent, and if that's the case, I think that's the kind of thing that should be celebrated.
Yeah. The only thing I'll point out is second place, with Mike Trout getting second place. And the question is, should Mike Trout have gotten second place?
Can I ask you something? After first place, does it matter?
Yes.
No. No, they don't get trophies for participation. You either win the MVP or you don't.
Look, there's a big difference between the silver and the bronze, okay?
No. Nobody's national anthem is being played but the winner. So who cares?
I was watching MLB Network, and there was no national anthem being played. So you're going to need to check your channel lineup and get that fixed.
I meant for the medals. It was an Olympic thing.
I understand.
Anyway, so there were a lot of O's fans that were actually upset that Chris Davis didn't get the nod, either the MVP or second place. Do you think there's any validity to feeling that way?
I would tell those people to go take a look at Chris Davis' strikeouts for the second half of the MLB season.
Okay, so you think he was a legit MVP candidate in the first half, fell off that track in the second half?
That is correct.
Okay, I think that's fair. I think it's ridiculous that people are upset that Chris Davis didn't get either the award or better consideration. I think he wasn't better than Miguel Cabrera.
If Chris Davis would have kept his pace up like he did in the first half of the season, he would have been a definite MLB MVP candidate. But the fact of the matter is he slumped in the second half. Whether it be he got tired or whether he just got cold for a little bit, it doesn't matter. The strikeouts went up. He was not the MVP of this league.
Yeah.
Great season. Not MVP-like.
Absolutely. All right. Another thing that's been big on Twitter, A-Rod versus baseball. Who you got?
I have A-Rod.
You think that he's going to get out of the 211 game suspension?
No.
Okay, maybe I misunderstood who you got. You're on A-Rod's side then?
Yes.
Why?
Well, first of all, the 211 game suspension is absolutely ridiculous. There's no reason for 211 games. It's such an arbitrary number by MLB that it's absolutely ridiculous. The fact of the matter is, MLB stated that their drug policy is that you will be suspended for either 50 games, 100 games, or for life. If it's really the situation of it, this is his first offense, which it is, then he needs to be suspended for 50 games. If you want to take another aspect to him, then you need to ban him for life due to basically him interfering with the spirit of the game. The fact of the matter is, though, I'm all on A-Rod's side because the more the Yankees have to eat that contract, the better off I am.
I will say that though I loathe Alex Rodriguez, it does seem like he's being unfairly singled out. He's a total douche. I think he's
total douche.
I think he's bad for baseball, but I don't think that baseball really has a case to be doling out this kind of punishment unless there's more to the story that we don't know.
And as much as I wanted to call him a whiner for walking out of his proceedings for Bud Selig not testifying, there's an obvious reason why Bud Selig is not testifying. It's because he doesn't want to have to answer the hard questions that he was avoiding for years upon years.
No, see, there I'm gonna part ways with you because, first of all, I do fault Alex Rodriguez for acting like a child. Secondly, Bud Selig doesn't have to testify. This isn't Bud Selig v. Alex Rodriguez. It's Major League Baseball. And Major League Baseball has paid representatives to go to these kind of hearings for them who are learned in the law. Okay. As Alex Rodriguez has his representation.
That's fine. Who passed down the punishment?
Bud Selig
does
not
you.
Need to be there.
Yeah, who passed down the punishment?
What, why don't you just put the two of them in a ring and see who douches...
Who douches themselves out?
Yes, who douches it out between Alex Rodriguez and Bud Selig. As horrifying a visual as that is.
I can tell you right now, massive pay-per-view. I'm thinking like at least like $300 million pay-per-view event right there.
If I had a lucid thought there, it was this.
A loose thought?
Lucid.
Okay.
If I had a lucid thought, it was this. You cannot fault Bud Selig for not personally attending to this matter. I think that you put that in the hands of the professionals and have Major League Baseball, not Selig, have Major League Baseball take care of this in the appropriate avenue. If they've behaved, you know, in an inappropriate way like you and I have discussed, at least letting them do this part of the business right is not unreasonable.
Okay, are you done? Because I've already started planning out the douche fight of the century, okay? You want to move on to the next topic before I get caught up in this whole douche fight?
I really do.
Really do, or you really douche?
So can we talk for a second, moving on, about the Detroit Tigers coaching staff?
Okay, sure.
They're trying really, really hard to make me feel old.
I don't know what you're talking about. What's going on?
Their coaching staff is almost entirely comprised of people that I've seen play. Like in person.
Like who? Like Alan Trammell or what?
No, their new coach, or their new manager is Brad Ausmus.
Okay.
Okay. One of their other coaches is Omar Vizcaíno.
Okay.
And also joining the staff, Wally Joyner.
Okay. So we have baseball cards of all those guys.
Yeah. I watched these guys play.
Okay.
Like, in some cases, in my adulthood.
Yeah.
They're just trying to make me feel old. That's not cool, Detroit. That's not cool.
Are you done?
A little bit.
Get over it. You're old.
I was afraid of that.
All right, I want to ask you a serious conversation, though, and this kind of goes back to the Cabrera thing. Prince Fielder was traded this past week for Ian Kinsler. So the Texas Rangers and the Detroit Tigers pulled off a major blockbuster.
You mean Detroit pulled off a major money dump?
No, I think Texas got exactly what they needed. They got a solid middle-of-the-lineup individual for their lineup. Not to mention, Fielder going to Texas with those walls coming in for him, I think he's going to do great there. I think it's just a question of how long does he stay healthy for, but I think it's a great move for Texas.
Why did Detroit do it?
Well, they wanted to free up money.
Yes, so it is a money dump.
Yes, but it was something that the Rangers were able to take on additional money, so why wouldn't you do it? I know you're unfamiliar rooting for a team that doesn't have money, but this is what common teams do. They say, oh, we'll be willing to take on that additional money to get a good player.
Do you think that Fielder will continue to perform at the level that contract merits?
For how long?
That's what I'm asking you.
I think he manages to put up 30 home runs for the next four plus years.
Okay. We'll see.
Okay.
This is how this trade made me feel, okay? This trade kind of made me go back to me of several years ago who was so angry with the Orioles for not putting up the money for players like Prince Fielder, you know, Mark Teixeira, Prince Fielder, the whole nine yards, and said, you know what, Orioles, thank you. Thank you for not dropping a crazy shit ton of money for a player that the team that eventually got him felt like they just needed to dump. Because they couldn't handle the contract, because they couldn't stay competitive with that contract. You know, when I look at, you know, Robbie Cano trying to get $300 million, now of course he won't get it, but trying to get $300 million, it's crazy talk. I mean, it's monopoly money. I'm almost thankful at a certain level that the Orioles don't involve themselves in that kind of madness. That's how this trade made me feel this week.
Okay.
Am I crazy?
Yeah, you're crazy.
All right. Let's go on then. Also big on Twitter. I heard the Yankees did something.
Yeah, they signed Brian McCann. Kind of a big deal.
Is that kind of a big deal?
Kind of a big deal.
All right, so 5 years, $85 million?
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Why is that a big deal?
Because it's going to affect what we do with Matt Wieters in the future.
I'm not sure I agree wholeheartedly. I think it has an effect on what Matt Wieters will do, but I don't think it will have an effect on what the Orioles do with Matt Wieters.
Oh, gotcha. So we're not just going to let him go regardless. Okay, gotcha. Okay.
I don't think much of the Orioles' ability to re-sign Matt Wieters at this point, so I'm not really sure it has any effect on the
Orioles. Gotcha. So this just is an impact for Matt Wieters, not so much the Orioles.
Yes.
Okay.
Although I will say that it probably averts the crisis of the worst-case scenario, which is Matt Wieters in pinstripes.
Yeah. Let's bring up another person that just recently signed a contract, and that's Johnny Peralta.
All right. Now, I saw a lot of stuff on Twitter about this deal. Why is this a big deal? Is it because he was banged for steroids?
He was banged for PEDs. I think the bigger deal for us is Peralta was being looked at by the Orioles briefly, but I really don't think it was anything serious. Mm-hmm. But the more interesting thing is the Cards were able to shore up shortstop with Peralta there, which means that any notion of J.J. Hardy being traded to the Cardinals is out the window now.
Sure. All right. Lastly, you wanted to talk about something else.
Yeah, I've got another tweet of the week. So this is my actual tweet of the week. It is from Matthew Shroka at Section 336. The comment is, "Goats are wonderful, beautiful creatures. You haven't lived until you've seen a goat frolic across a field."
Well, Scott, I ask you, have you lived?
No, I haven't.
Well, you haven't lived until you've seen a goat frolic across a field.
Needless to say, we're going to have to make that our life's mission in the upcoming few months.
I know somebody who can make that happen for you, and you're making fun of them. So you know what? Not looking good for you, my friend.
Needless to say, if I need to get a goat, I'll find myself a goat.
I think that's what the goats are worried about.
And with that, I think it's time to take a break from this goat business, and we'll be right back. And, well, I think we're going to talk a few rumors.
Ooh, intriguing.
Intriguing. Yeah. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Bird's Eye View. All right, we're going to talk a little few rumors that have been going around the grapevine lately regarding Orioles being traded. And the first one I want to talk about was J.J. Hardy being rumored to be traded for Shelby Miller to the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, obviously, this trade is no longer valid because they've signed Peralta. But I'd like to go through...
Well, before that, it was never valid either because it only came out because it came up in the past tense. It was the Orioles were rumored to have talked to the Cardinals about Shelby Miller, and the Cardinals turned them down. It was completely over and done. And then there was this whole conversation about, oh, well, will the Orioles trade for Shelby Miller? Will the Orioles trade J.J. Hardy? And it was all, you know, speculation about something that had already fizzled.
Okay, I understand that. I think the most interesting thing to me, though, was the reaction on Twitter that day towards J.J. Hardy being traded for Shelby Miller. And how people actually came back and said that would be a bad trade for the Orioles to pull off.
Okay.
I can't believe he would actually go out and say that. The fact of the matter is, you have J.J. Hardy, who has 1 year left on his contract. He is 31 years old. He's coming off the best season of his career. This is a prime opportunity to trade someone when his value is not going to be any higher. He's going to be 32 next year. And you're getting Shelby Miller, who would be a number two starter on this team. He's 23 years old. He doesn't reach arbitration, I think, until 2010. How would you not go for that trade? That is a clear win for the Orioles.
Well, that assumes many things.
It does assume many things.
It assumes that Shelby Miller is the straight-up real deal.
Which, more than likely, it would not be. But the Aspect One Twitter was asked, if you had to trade J.J. Hardy and Shelby Miller straight up, would you do it? And people were adamant in saying, no, you shouldn't do that. And I cannot believe Orioles fans. This is the problem that we get into. This is why we still have Jim Johnson right now. It's the aspect of Jim Johnson should have been traded away last offseason. But we didn't want to do that.
But again, it assumes that Shelby Miller is the real deal.
All right. Shelby Miller. Okay, look.
I'm not saying he's not. I'm just saying that your assumption that people are crazy if they don't like to trade hinges on the fact that he has to be the real deal.
That's fine. Eventually, you have to make these trades and take a risk in order to try to get a top of the rotation starter.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying to call it crazy, to call Orioles fans who are not down with the trade crazy, means that you're assuming he's the real deal. It also assumes that you're not.
I'm also assuming that J.J. Hardy wouldn't just come out and break his wrist the next day playing ping pong.
It also assumes.
Assumptions make an ass out of you and me.
Generally, just me.
Yeah.
It also assumes that the Orioles can absorb that loss. Everyone says, oh, sure, no big deal. Manny Machado, just swing over to shortstop. Well, I don't know if you remember the end of the season where Manny Machado...
Excuse me. We don't talk about that, okay?
All right. So it puts a hole...
There's a hole in him now?
It puts a knee to the groin of your left side of the infield. Seriously. Really? You either need to fill a shortstop position or you need to fill a hole in third base. And that's simply no easy thing to do.
Okay.
It's not like we can just go get a guy like Mark Reynolds and throw him in third base.
I understand that. My aspect would still come back to the fact is Machado is eventually going to be available this season. He could have been shifted over to shortstop. I see no reason why you can't find a third baseman, whether it be in Flaherty or Danny Valencia, to play there.
If those two guys were major league starters, they'd already be major league starters. Okay, Flaherty wouldn't be a guy that we got in the Rule 5 draft because his team, I think it was the Indians, would have cared enough about him to cover him up. And if Danny Valencia was the real deal, if he were a starting MLB third baseman, he wouldn't have come off the Dan Duquette scrap heap to sign with the Orioles anyway.
Okay.
I'm just saying the fact that you call it crazy hinges on a lot of assumptions. Personally, yes, I would have traded J.J. Hardy in a package for Shelby Miller. I'm down with the trade. But I see the other side, too, very clearly.
All right, let me ask you this question regarding Machado and shifting into shortstop. Okay. Would you come back to J.J. Hardy, who's going to be 31 this year, going to be 32 at the end of his contract, and come back and try to re-sign him to a contract extension?
Yes.
Okay, would you sign him to a contract extension for another 2 years?
Yes.
Okay, how much would you offer him?
Oh, I have no idea what the market is for him, to be honest with you. Because the question is what are you going to do with him? Are you going to leave him at short?
You're going to leave him at short.
Is he a candidate to, say, move to third? Isn't that what happens to aging shortstops?
Only Hall of Famers.
Ah, okay. No, I have no idea what the market is. He's
Oh, and Alex Rodriguez.
He's grievously underpaid right now.
So would you offer him a contract for, like, 2 years, $12 million each season?
I think that's a little too rich for my blood.
Okay. $8 million a season? God, you are such a Peter Angelos.
I might go 215, 216. Sure.
Okay. You're such a cheapskate. All right.
I'm just saying, it's a tough call.
So you want to re-sign him, but not for a lot of money.
I do not want to overpay the back end of somebody's career based on what he's done for us lately. Okay. We've seen that program. All right, so we've talked about the J.J. Hardy aspect of things. There's another rumor that I feel like we have to address, and that's with Weeters.
Yes.
So, you know, Weeters has been identified as somebody who's now available. You know, the Orioles are willing to listen to offers for him. First of all, one of the Orioles not willing to listen to offers for anybody.
Well, there's a few people that you would not listen to offers for. Jones is one. Machado is another. That's about it.
Okay. I think everybody is tradable. It just matters what you're going to get in return. you know, you say Jones is off the table, but frankly, if you can get a ridiculous package for him, I wouldn't say that he is off the table.
Yeah, I understand that, but to a certain regard, he's off the table because no one's going to be that ridiculous to give him an incredible package.
I agree with you, but the point was I guess one of perspective. So, you know, again, we're hearing Wieters is on the table, and Wieters is only on the table because he's got 2 years left on his contract, and we're starting to think that we're not going to be able to re-sign him. I know that the Orioles have made a couple of offers to him in negotiations, and he's declined, you know, basically to let those negotiations go very far. A lot of this has to do with he's a client of the snake oil salesman himself, Scott Boras.
Yeah, you know, it's always the question of Scott Boras is basically going to take him to free agency or not. Based off the fact that Dan Duquette is completely pessimistic about doing contract extensions this offseason with Scott Boras clients, it certainly screams to me that, you know, Matt Wieters is going to be moving on into free agency. And looking at Brian McCann's contract, he's going to be looking to get somewhere in that $15 to $20 million per year contract. And based off your cheapness that you've already depicted for J.J. Hardy, I just don't see the Orioles being able to sign him as well.
Well, I think if Matt Wieters has two good years, then yes, he deserves that money and he should get it and the Orioles should pay it. I think you start getting into a dangerous situation with Wieters if he continues to struggle at the plate. You know, if he's a middling catcher or a catcher, you know, that's light on the stick, if he's a bit of an offensive liability, you know, do you go ahead and spend all that crazy money for him? Yeah, sure. He calls a great game. He throws out a lot of runners. He leads a good staff. I get that. But if he doesn't hold up his end of the bargain at the plate, you know, God, I love Wieters. I've got his jersey, but do we really want to spend that money when it can probably be spent better elsewhere? I think that's a very difficult question. So, I mean, Scott, what is the market for a guy like Wieters?
Well, there was an article on ESPN, and they basically ran through the...
Sorry, what?
On the four-letter network.
Okay.
It ran through potential trade opportunities for them, and these are just based off looking at for catchers that are out there, teams that are looking for catchers. The teams listed were the Braves, the White Sox, the Rockies, the Reds, and the Cubs. The one that is most interesting to me is the White Sox, because the White Sox have been dangling Chris Sale possibly out there. But the issue comes back to they're not going to do a straight-up trade for Wieters and Chris Sale. It would require you to also package Bundy or Gausman along with it.
That's just nuts.
Well, here's the thing, though. You're getting a top-of-the-rotation starter, and you're also making the assumption that Bundy and Gausman are a proven commodity. You were just lecturing about Shelby Miller maybe not being a proven commodity. Chris Sale's a proven commodity.
I'll tell you what. If we could include an extension for Sale in the deal, I would part with Bundy at the least.
Okay. I think you're giving up on Bundy a little too soon.
All right. Okay. I hope I'm wrong about that.
Yeah. Just like you're giving up on Brian Mattis a little too soon.
What?
Well, he was a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, I didn't give up on him too soon. He gave up on me too soon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry, the teams that you said that were involved, you said the White Sox and Sale, who else is in there?
The Braves were in there as well since they lost McCann.
Yeah, but they've made the announcement that Gattis is definitely going to be their guy moving forward.
And I don't really see a fit there either. I don't think they're going to be trading really any of their young pitching. You got the Rockies, the Reds, and the Cubs in there. And again, all of them would have to be offering young pitching. Homer Bailey was also offered via the is also being possibly offered via the Reds. I just don't see any of those clubs making that move at this time. And I don't see the Orioles making that move either. I think it's just going to be the situation where the Orioles say, we're going to stick to it and just wait. It will be an interesting season if the Orioles do not do well, though. Because once they get into the trade deadline, halfway through the season, Matt Wieters could become a very valuable trade chip if the Orioles are not doing very well. I could see him being a major addition to a playoff club, both in a DH/catcher role, similar to how Mike Napoli affected the Red Sox last year.
Sure, and just think about it. I mean, imagine that a contender has an injury,
right?
You know, behind the plate. That would make it just ridiculous to see what would happen for the Matt Wieters market.
Hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully the Orioles are in the playoff hunt and they're not going to be willing to trade away Wieters. But if they falter, you know, I think the Orioles need to be given consideration to being very aggressive. And I think they would be very aggressive at the trade deadline halfway through the season. I'm not sure how much his trade value would change. I would hope that he would be better than he was last year. But even if he's the same, he's going to still have that value of being a proven catcher, especially, like you said, if someone gets injured.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly hope that the Orioles can re-sign him. Let me ask you one last thing about Wieters. Do you buy into the Scott Boras is evil hype?
No, he's just very good at his job.
Okay. So you don't think that his whole business is, you know, lotions and potions and magic pills. You think that he basically is going about it the right way?
He is one of the best marketers in the business. He's one of the best marketers in the business. It's as simple as that. If you're going to hold it against him, then you need to hold it against the owners that actually are willing to give out those ridiculous contracts.
See, that's the thing that I don't get. Like, he's not the only one in the conversation. You know what I mean? This whole demonizing of Scott Boras, somebody's paying these people all that crazy money. You know, somebody's on the other side writing the check. Scott Boras is just making the demands.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, I think we should take a quick break. And when we come back, I don't know, it's starting to warm up in here a little bit.
Yeah, it's starting to get a little hot. We'll be right back.
Stove baseball. Nothing like it. Nothing like it, especially when there's hot stove baseball to talk about and the Orioles are actually involved. I mean, I can't get over the excitement. Just look what the Orioles have done so far. Scott, can you just wow me with some names that the Orioles have acquired in the last couple weeks? I mean, can you just throw down some of these sizzling, hot commodities that the Orioles have managed to pull off just recently?
Sure, I would love to. There has been the signing of left-handed pitcher Kelvin De La Cruz. There has been the right-handed pitcher Egmer Escalona. And today, there were some big moves. The Orioles picked up infielder Cord Phelps. And they are also able to acquire via trade right-handed pitcher Brad Brock.
Are you shitting me right now?
That's who they got.
Sir. I said hot stove baseball. I gave this big like intro and I was all excited about it. And you got those four names for me?
Yes.
What are they doing?
Well, see, there's a compost pile with like almost dead baseball players and they go up there and they just get a shovel and they just throw them in the back of Dan Duquette's pickup truck and then they drive off.
Okay. Do they have paper in Dan Duquette's office?
Yes.
Do you think that they are capable of writing this down? All right, Dan,
no.
Listen, I need you to make a list for me, buddy, okay? Listen, focus. Left field, designated hitter, second base, starting pitching, relief pitching that doesn't suck. I need you to focus. Work on it. What the hell are they doing? Come on now. Seriously, this is what we've got to work with, these guys? Now, let me ask you this. How can we possibly expect to compete in the AL East with that?
Well, I think you're failing to realize, too, that we've got excellent players such as Steve Pierce on the team. And
what?
Yeah, Steve Pierce. What about him?
Who the hell is Steve Pierce? Was tendered a contract?
Yeah, you didn't know about that?
Why?
Did you follow any of the tenders today?
No.
You know that guy that we kept on saying he gone?
No.
Nolan Reimold, he back.
You're kidding me.
No.
Nolan Reimold was tendered a contract?
Nolan Reimold would be tendered a contract.
You mean we're going to pay at least $1 million to pay for Nolan Ryan's next surgery.
Yeah, see, apparently Nate McCloud's contract was going to be too expensive, so instead we're going to be fielding Nolan Ryan in at left field.
This is the thing I do not understand. How much money is Steve Pierce supposed to make? It's like $2 million, right?
It's like $1.2 million, I think it's going to come out to be.
So we're going to spend $2 million between Steve Pierce and Nolan Ryan, but we're too broke to go get real players?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, again, Dan Duquette, pull out the paper, write this down. Get rid of all of these guys, the four guys who I've never heard of that you acquired, and Nolan Ryan and Steve Pierce, and take that savings and put it towards a real baseball player.
Pardon me?
A real baseball player? One that's going to help us win.
Okay.
Look, I know that 2012 was magical and it was awesome, and it was really great to see them get something for nothing and their chicks for free, but why are we still thinking that it can work after having seen it fail so miserably last year?
Because it worked great in 2012.
All right. Well, is all hope lost? I mean, is there any buzz that the Orioles could be part of anything rewarding?
Well, there's a few bits and pieces here and there.
I'm feeling really down after that Nolan Ryan thing. I'm going to need you to help me out here.
The biggest name out there that the Orioles are still linked to is Carlos Beltran. He's looking for, you know, a 3-year deal. He's 37 years old, though. He's probably going to be looking for somewhere in the ballpark of 3 years, $40-plus million, because he just finished his contract with 2 years, $26 million. You know, Shane Victorino last year got 3 years, $39 million with the Boston Red Sox. And do you think the Orioles come back and make a similar move like that for Carlos Beltran?
Do I think it will happen? No.
Okay.
Do I think they should make it happen? Yes.
Okay, so you're willing to spend $13 million on Carlos Beltran because he's 37 years old, but you're not willing to spend more money on J.J. Hardy.
I didn't say I wasn't willing to spend money on J.J. Hardy, but yes, I am.
But you feel like you can Jew him.
I am willing to spend on Carlos Beltran, and this is why. Okay, a couple of reasons why I'm willing to spend on him.
Because you think J.J. Hardy is a fool.
I'm willing to spend on Carlos Beltran. Will you leave me alone with the J.J. Hardy? I'm willing to spend on Beltran for a couple of reasons. First, because I don't think this is the latest edition of Derek Lee and Vladimir Guerrero and that train of players who come to Baltimore to end their career ungracefully.
Like Jim Tomei.
Right.
Who you said was a great trade.
Yeah. I think that, well, what did we give up for him?
A catcher.
Yeah, let's
fight. Which we might need that catcher, by the way.
Let's fight this out. Let's fight this out later. Carlos Beltran, I'm all for, because there is legitimate interest in him in the market. We're not his team of last resort. You know, the Orioles are going out and getting into an active competition for Carlos Beltran because they are not the only team that thinks that he can help them. And he also happens to fit a very serious hole for the Orioles in that DH hole. So yes, it's not my money, but it's only money, and I would absolutely sign him. You don't have to give up any other talent to get him. Go get him.
Actually, that's not technically true.
You don't have to give up any talent that's already in the system.
Okay, thank you. Because you will be getting up a draft pick because he was tendered an offer.
That's true. And I would hate for the Orioles to blow another opportunity to ruin another first-round draft pick's career.
Okay, but to be fair, the Orioles have done a pretty decent job as of late with drafting in the first round.
How so?
They have a lot of players from the first round that are in Baseball America's top 100.
Oh, I'm so happy for them. How's that working out for them?
I'm just saying, at least they're making quality moves in the draft as opposed to what they had been doing for the past 10 years.
First rounders like Brian Mattis?
We already talked about this in previous podcasts. The likelihood of a first rounder actually blooming into anything of value at that position is like 6%.
So why are we so strung up about giving up on a first-round draft pick? I understand that
I'm not against the system. I'm not against the aspect of giving up onto it. I'm just pointing out that he would cost you something.
I understand.
You basically just said we should go out and just spend money, but you're also throwing away the ability to go out and get the draft. And the Orioles have been really big on retaining draft picks. Now, Dan Duquette did come back and say that he'd be more willing this year to basically give away that draft pick to go out and sign these players. So,
I'm just saying, I'm down.
It's not just money.
I'm down because they have not proven that they can develop those players. And because even though the system is is bare right now, I feel like a Carlos Beltran really solves a lot of problems for them.
Okay.
No, he's not the only solution. They may not be a player away, but he does solve a lot of problems.
All right, I'm going to bring another person up, which is Mark Ellis, who's been in talks to play second base. And this would be someone to compete or go against Brian Roberts, basically.
Or Jonathan Scope.
Or Jonathan Scope. Now, his numbers are very mediocre, in my opinion. He has an on-base percentage of somewhere around 310 or 320 for an on-base percentage. Nothing to really write home against. There are other players on the market right now that are better. Omar Infante screams the aspect of, this is a great player. Not to mention, Omar Infante could also be your third baseman to give Manny some time off, or if Manny's not able to start the season, he could go over there and play third base to start the season as well.
I think that the second base market is very weak, including, you know, the Brian Roberts watch. And I think that Mark Ellis is not a terrible option, but he is not something that you need to fight for. And if it's gonna be tough to get Mark Ellis, I say you pass.
But if you could make an offer for Omar Infante, why wouldn't you make an offer for Omar Infante? You need a second baseman.
I mean, I'm really not sold on Omar Infante. I will say, he had a good season last year. At 31, he'll be 32 this next season. I know, right? I wouldn't go any further than...
He's like your age.
Stop it. I wouldn't go any further than a year or two. And, meh. I have nothing more to say about
it. So you're going to Jew him just like you did J.J. Hardy, basically.
Yes.
What do you have against 30-year-olds?
Everything.
Okay. That's fair.
All right.
Self-hate.
All right, Mr. Omar Infante. So this is the guy you want? This is the guy you want to go out and get?
Look, I think it would shore up second base really quickly. The aspect is we're still relying on Jonathan Scope to be the answer at second base. What if Jonathan Scope isn't the option at second base? Even if he is the option at second base, you could always say we're going to move him to third base and we're going to put Manny Machado at shortstop. If you don't want to do that, then it still gives you the option of trading Jonathan Scope as a trade chip later down the road as well.
Sure, mortgage that future. It's fine.
Just saying, these are options that need to be on the table. Maybe you put a offer in with Weeders, Jonathan Scope in for a starting pitcher. I mean, these are, even a young starting pitcher, these are options that the Orioles need to be given consideration, but they have to go out and sign these players and take risk. Now, there's another person that I've come across, too, that might be up the Orioles' alley, too. There is rumor out there that the Orioles are looking at a player called Tomo Oka.
What?
Tomo Oka.
Oh, from New Jersey.
No, he actually plays in the Nippon Professional Baseball League. And he's a 10-year big league veteran.
How big league?
Well, Japanese.
That's not big league.
But you're going to like this. He's a knuckleballer.
Oh, jeez. How many middling knuckleballers can the Orioles organization accumulate? How many AA, AAA knuckleballers can we possibly have? Really?
A lot.
This is the guy you want? You want the knuckleballer from Japan?
This screams right up the Orioles' wheelhouse, okay?
I
can see a Tsuyoshi Wada type deal right here.
Yes, so can I. A guy we pay too much money to that never sees the light of day. You're absolutely right. Is there any good news on this hot stove issue for the Orioles?
There really is no really good news at this point. And going back to the last segment we had, which was looking at trade chips with J.J. Hardy and looking at Matt Weider's trade chips, it all comes down to the situation of if the Orioles want to compete, they're going to have to spend money. The whole fact is they are wanting to trade Weider's or looking at trading Weider's because they're not sure if they're going to be able to afford him. The same goes back to all these free agents. There's a bunch of these free agents out there, and I'm not saying that they're all great, but you have to take these risks and spend the money. Shane Victorino is a prime example. Would a normal club given him 3 years for $39 million? Heck no. But the Red Sox took the risk, and it paid dividends for them in a World Series championship. Sometimes you got to take the risk and say, well, we crapped the bed. It's just a question of, can the Orioles take that risk? And I say, yes, they can. There was the Bloomberg report that always comes out every single year, and they basically looked at the Orioles and the rest of MLB franchises and looked at what the team's worth was, and lo and behold, the Orioles are the seventh most valuable team in all of Major League Baseball. Not to mention, if you look at their TV revenue deal, Well, their TV revenue deal with Madison is the fourth largest regional sports network in all of Major League Baseball. The Yankees, Mets, and Boston are the only other teams that have a larger value in terms of regional networks. And, more importantly, they're the only team in the top 10 that have a net gain in revenue. All those other teams have net losses somewhere in the ballpark of $50 to $20 million.
Let me ask you something. The fourth largest TV network, they don't have the entirety of that. They've got what, two-thirds of that?
They've got two-thirds of it, and the Nationals have the other portion of it. But this just encompassed the Orioles portion of it.
Okay, that's an important distinction.
This only covered the Orioles portion of it. The Nationals did have some media in their team value, but it was a very small proportion compared to the Orioles. That's why I mentioned that, in proportionality, it only was equal to the Yankees, Mets, and Boston, whereas Washington's was very small compared to what their net value was.
So you're saying the Orioles have money to burn. Why aren't they burning it?
The Orioles have money. They actually have $20 million more so than other, basically before they go into the red. And again, everyone said, if you're going to be an owner, you're going to lose money. Now, I'm not saying that's the way to run a business, and I don't think that's the way Peter Angelis has considered making a business.
No, he does not.
But what I'm pointing out is there is room to spend more money. Point of the matter, all teams have $25 million more to spend this year because of the new TV deals that were made with Fox, ESPN,
TBS.
There's one other interesting thing in the Bloomberg report that I wanted to point out too, and that was the Orioles were 24th in sponsorship. They only made
24th out of 30?
Yes.
That doesn't sound good.
They only made $18 million last year in terms of sponsorships.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Just to put it in perspective, parking at the parking garages but the parking lots at Camden Yards brought in $2 million.
Okay, so you want them to hike up the parking so that they can go sign a player?
No, but I think it is interesting that last July, Doug Duenes, who was vice president of business operations, was relieved of his duties. So my question would be to the Orioles, what are you going to do in order to get the businesses to come back and support this team? What are you going to be able to do to, market yourself to businesses in the area? Or is it the case that the Orioles really can't do anything? It's an aspect of this area is not really conducive to massive corporate sponsorship.
Well, here's my question. Do you think that it could be somewhat strategic on the Orioles' part, not wanting to get entangled into long contracts and long commitments with the business community while they're terrible?
Okay.
When they're at the absolute valley of their worth, their ability to sign lucrative deals. Do you think that they're waiting for the team to produce to the point where people will want to be associated with them so they can sign even better deals?
You're right. The Orioles are going to wait for contracts, and eventually, as soon as they become good, then they're going to sign these players. Oh, I'm sorry. These companies to long-term contracts. And that's when we'll build our core. But until that point, there's no need for us to be wasting our money on, getting in, supporting our franchise players. I mean, our franchise companies. I mean, our corporate sponsors.
Look, I agree. It's probably incompetence. I'm just throwing it out there saying that, the whole 2005, 2011 period was not a time that you wanted to go try to drum up business to be associated with the Orioles.
No. I understand that. My aspect is, and I'm not here to go and preach about what everyone will say, is, I'm not here to spend Peter Angelis' money.
I have no problem with that.
I understand you don't. But the fact of the matter is, if the Orioles want to continue to be competitive, they need to make a determination of how they want to compete. Do they want to follow the Tampa Bay model and hope that they can develop their minor leagues, which I think is going to take 6 to 8 years, and they're just going to have to constantly reflush the cycle just like the Marlins did back in the day? Or are they going to go out there and spend money like the Giants do and basically say, we're going to spend a lot of money this year and then back it out the next year, spend a lot of money this year, back it out this year, and bounce between $80 million to $120 million each season? I'm not saying the Giants are always like that, but it's a very similar model to what the Orioles could be taking.
Sure.
That's actually proved pretty well for them, too, since they've won two World Series.
And I think that it's a lot easier for an Orioles fan to swallow the lean times when there are, big spending years associated with it, when you have the opportunity to do something like win a World Series.
Yeah. It's all about being competitive. There is understanding of there's going to have to be some rebuilding and ebb and flow. But this whole aspect of eventually it's going to happen. Well, I'm sorry, Jake. it eventually does have to happen.
Let me ask you something. If the Orioles fail, if the Orioles fail to build on this 2012 campaign with another mediocre season in 2014, do you think that you'll start to see the fan base start to get suspicious?
I would say yes. Yeah, I actually think it'll be interesting to see what FanFest looks like this year. You had a record turnout last year for FanFest with that monumental 2012 season. It'll be interesting to see how many people actually have hopped off the bandwagon this offseason if they make no moves.
I think that last year was certainly a peak for FanFest, but I think that the 2014 season is a pivotal one for the Orioles, and I think that the way that they approach the offseason, you know, will clearly be a big part of that. Here in, you know, November, the winter meetings haven't even happened. I mean, there's a lot of the offseason left to go. It's just frustrating to sit and watch, you know, other moves happen and watch the Orioles sit on their hands.
Well, Jake, with that, I think it's time we take a break. Let's go to our next segment. My personal favorite, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
All right. That's right. It's time again for the good, the bad, and the ugly. And because I like to have Scott get the last word, I'm going to go ahead and go first. My good for this week, Manny Machado's knee. It's my favorite knee of the week. The Orioles have said they are quite confident that Manny Machado is actually going to be available for the opening of the season. Buck Showalter says that he needs to start playing games by about March 15th. And if he does so and responds well, then he'll be ready for the home opener. Scott, thoughts on that? Are you surprised?
Not entirely surprised. I think it's very optimistic. I think Manny can be available for the home opener. It'll just be interesting to see what his fluidity and how he does at the plate. I think he's going to be very cold at the plate to start the season.
Yeah, I'm suspicious. I got to be honest. I would be very surprised to see him at the beginning of the season. And if we do see him, I'm just, you know, I'm wary of saying, oh, he's back, he's back.
Right.
All right. Who's your good for the week?
My good for the week are baby girls.
I'm listening.
We've had a few additions within the, well, I guess not immediate family for the podcast, but within the very, very near family. We saw the birth of two baby girls that are friends of the family. So I just wanted to congratulate Julie and Dan and Aaron and Jamie for both of their little girls. So my good for the week is little girls, because how can you turn around little girls?
All right.
I'm going to go get my van now and go pass candy around.
You didn't have the awful mustache.
That's true.
But I can't argue with that. Little girls are awesome. Congrats all around. All right, my bad this week. My bad is actually, well, it's a delicate subject, Scott. And if you watch Monday Night Football this week, I think you'll know what I'm talking about. My bad is RG3's nuts.
Don't you mean midsection?
No, I mean the quarterback sack.
Oh, like when they wrap him up and put him on the ground?
Not so much. I sat and watched RG3 get kicked in a very special place, which made me giggle like a schoolgirl.
You did laugh pretty uncontrollably.
I think that's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen on a football field. But couldn't have felt good. So for this week, my bad, RG3's nuts.
Okay. My bad for the week is going to go to individuals that want to turn relievers into starters. This notion of turning Jim Johnson into a starter, or even Tommy Hunter back into a starter, is, well, how do I put this, idiotic.
And it comes up every year.
It does.
Why?
It's really the fact of the matter of people are looking for starters for this team. You're just looking in the wrong places. So I'm asking you, please stop. Please stop now.
Just stop talking.
You're wrong. You're absolutely wrong.
All right. I like it. Lastly, my ugly for the week. My ugly for the week goes to Jim Caldwell. Look, I'm sick of the Wildcat. I'm sick of seeing Tyrod Taylor on the field. I'm sick of seeing trick, goofy plays. You know what that reeks of? It reeks of desperation. And I'm sorry, there is not that's not the reason that the Ravens won against the Jets at home this week. It wasn't the goofy plays. Stop it. Focus this week on the plays that are actually going to beat the Steelers. Focus this week on getting better. Focus this week on improving line play and improving the running game, in making sure that you have actual routes that your receivers know how to run so that you don't have botched plays by Joe Flacco throwing into ridiculous coverage. Don't spend a second longer than you have to coming up with a way to fool people that are going to see right through it. Jim Caldwell, you are ugly.
My ugly for the week has to go to, I'm sorry, Dan Duquette.
What?
Sorry, Dan, but the fact that you had to tender Nolan Reimold really makes me question your sanity going forward. The fact that you even tendered Steve Pierce makes me question your sanity. Looking through the hot stove additions that you've made so far this season, I like to consider that you'll strike gold again, but I just look at more wasted dollars. Here we are as Orioles fans once again going into this holiday season, hoping that there'll be presents left under our tree, but yet we wake up every single holiday morning and find a lump of coal. And it's not even a very good-looking piece of coal. It's just a tiny lump of coal that you know will never get onto the field. So Dan Duquette, you truly are the Grinch of this holiday. You truly are the miserly Scrooge. But if you're looking for an assistant, please call Jake English up because he's willing to dick over J.J. Hardy. And that's my ugly for the week.
So we've gone from nuggets to lumps of coal.
Lumps of coal.
All right. You know that for the holiday season, I'm going to make you rewrite "Twas the Night Before Christmas" in an Oriole theme, right? That performance, I think that you've got it in
you. So we can like sing it as well?
No. I think, you know, a dramatic reading of "Twas the Night Before the Season."
So it was "Twas the Night Before Christmas," and all through their house, not a goat was stirring.
Oh, Lord. All right. Is there anything else you want to get into on Orioles baseball this week?
Nope. I'm just crossing my fingers that the Orioles finally do something within the next 2 weeks. Highly doubtful. But I am here to make a prediction. And my prediction is the Ravens will win the next two games that they play in. Yes, Baltimore, the Ravens will win the next two games, both against the Steelers and the Vikings. And they will put themselves into playoff contention. And they will go to the playoffs this year. That is my prediction. I am sticking to it. Just like I stuck to Matt Wieters being a top five MVP candidate for the 2013 season.
You know, that would have been awfully impressive if you hadn't just torpedoed your your prediction. All right, well, with that, I think we should wrap up. And Baltimore and beyond, I bid you a fond adieu.
Good night, Baltimore.